Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And welcome to the NXT review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dadley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamflett and Michael Sidgwick, to look back on everything that happened on last night's episode of NXT. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review NXT but also Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on WrestleCulture. As I said, though, joined by Hamflett and Sidgwick to review the Go Home episode of NXT ahead of TakeOver 36. What do you reckon, Hamflett?
I reckon that maybe NXT Redemption really has come back, because this was a show where interesting things happened on a show that wasn't interesting, if that makes sense. This wasn't some sort of two-hour thrill ride, but it wasn't short on talking points. Some of them accidental, some of them weird. A couple of them tied to storylines. I found this a total slog with these occasional bizarre flashpoints that I've found myself looking forward to getting into with you two. Awfully strange episode, this.
I can't disagree with that. My prevailing take, I'll give you two. On a functional level, yes, this did the boring things to get people to take over. As a measured against the actual lowest curve possible, did this function to build interest, theoretically, in the upcoming TakeOver as a go-home show? Yes, it did. Did I enjoy any of it? Yes, I did, actually. There were three things that I really, really, really enjoyed on this episode of NXT, so I have to consider it a triumph,
yeah, even though it was
merely good.
Yeah, I think there were still issues with this show, unquestionably, but there were, like you say, lots of talking points, and they did a decent job of selling us on the show on Sunday. Let's dive straight into it. In fact, let's talk about the opening match, because we previewed quite a lot yesterday that just didn't happen. We obviously were looking ahead to the Cruiserweight Championship match between Roderick Strong and Kushida, but Malcolm Bivens and the Diamond Mine are out to start the show to announce that Kushida has not been medically cleared to wrestle, so they're going to issue an open challenge for anyone who wants to face Roderick Strong and Ilya Dragunov ahead of his match with Walter, of course, for the NXT UK Championship on Sunday. Thought he'd have a bit of a warm-up bout with Roderick Strong. And I thought, well, this is going to be an absolute battering. And that is exactly what we got. We got, you know, technically brilliant wrestling from these two, but also them just beating the crap out of each other. They did not hold back from chops to, I sort of missed what exactly caused it, but an errant elbow. It was great to see these two working together. I like that bit where Dragunov goes for the stomp off the top, but then Strong moves and he rolls through, and then he hits him with a knee strike. And then obviously we've got a bit where they're on the outside and Dragunov gets distracted, so Strong hoys him into the steps and hits a backbreaker on the ring apron as we go into the ad break. Dragunov's going for these German suplexes, a series of them. And then I assume this is where it happened. Strong's just sort of throwing elbows behind him to break free of it. And all of a sudden, Dragunov, and I said this on the news, I know I'm a sadist, but I thought it just so added to this match. Dragunov is pissing blood out of his forehead, sort of just above his right eye or somewhere around there. He's covered in claret, and it just... I mean, his chest was already battered as if it didn't needed to be before Sunday. He goes for that torpedo Moscow or whatever they call it exactly. Strong counters with a knee strike, and Dragunov bounces off the ropes and just hits his finisher anyway. gets the three count quite right in terms of rolling into Takeover with a bit of momentum. Calls out Walter, who just completely no-sells it and doesn't come out after the match. But, I mean, what a start, Hamplet, this was.
Yeah, I mean, undeniable drama by the end as a result of that accidental blood, because what a cut it was. You know, sometimes the wrestling will throw you a gift in this regard. It was late in the match anyway, so you got just enough of it before it was taken away from you. So it'll kind of be this memory that you have. We talk about that a lot with these NXT matches that are capital G, capital W, good wrestling. What will you actually remember from? You'll probably remember Roderick Strong versus Ilya Dragunov. And in terms of a build for Dragunov-Walter, not just because Dragunov actually won, but this was infinitely better than last week's attempt. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was on the docket for Dragunov this week, because they basically had to have him bounce back from a defeat and talk about how, oh, well, I got the last word and I held the belt up, so I'm going to beat you, Walter. But everybody like was dunking on it because it deserved it. This week, it wasn't just the blood, but it was the win. It was a cool choice for a mystery opponent. It was as if you can decide in headcanon that Dragunov wanted the open challenge because he wanted to finish what he started last week and actually prove himself with a win. He wasn't just going to call out Walter. He was going to show that he could get it done as well. It's less than ideal for Diamond Mine, but so was Tyler Rust getting released. So I think they'll be able to recover from this if they do want to revisit Strong and Kushida for the belt. And they just hit each other incredibly hard. I think Sidgwick's referred to the Walter match before as well, like all the safe places. There was plenty of that here as a tease for what I imagine we'll get. I am as invested as I possibly can be about Dragunov Walter 2 in that CWC. I've got concerns that the CWC is not going to be as good an environment as the BT Sports Studio was, yep. But this felt like a tester for it. And in that sense, like it was another success. Really, really good.
Yeah, I love this. I thought it was really, really, really strong. One complaint, I'm not sure if we'll get to it later on in the show because it was like all of 20 seconds, but piss off Malcolm Bivens. I don't want to tell Malcolm Bivens to piss off. I really like him. But when he said, oh, that didn't count because Dragunov isn't a cruiserweight. Well, what is he? He's a welterweight then? He's not a heavyweight. Like, I mean, he's shorter than strong. And it would be a bitch AF thing to say had, for example, Roderick Strong lost clean in the middle to Walter, like a giant colossus of a bloke. If Roderick Strong, after that, had said, oh, well, he's not a cruiserweight, so it didn't count, I would still feel like, oh, well, you're not this hard MMA bastard. And two, you're insulting my intelligence by basically saying the thing I've spent 13 minutes or so watching doesn't matter.
Regal has not just said, I'm not sanctioning that open challenge, and then Dragunov being like, no, I want to fight him anyway. And then that would have been a detail that would have totally justified that defense, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not sanctioning your open challenge. You don't run it around here. And then Dragunov says, no, I'll fight you.
They do not think about preserving our intelligence. They just insult it, and so what? So that annoyed me as a detail. Look, I'm not going to have any thought outrage on behalf of Diamond Mind, who are pretty much knackered, like, as it is. So it doesn't really feel like an earnest criticism, other than the result in the opponent, which they could have avoided, doesn't feel like an earnest criticism from Mind. Them insulting my intelligence did. This match, however, was pretty great. Mm. Very, very, very good to great. They leathered the piss out of each other. Those chops were disgusting. Those chops were deliberate. Those chops echoed what's going to happen to Dragunov on Saturday. And he reversed the strikes with his very intricate technical game. There was high drama at the end of the blood, of course. I bet you Dragunov was delighted that he busted himself open here because it really embodied his character and what they've been very, very overtly telling you. He loves pain. He loves pain because it teaches him to absorb it and it fires him up. And there are few better in the world at Roderick Strong than administering it. Thought it was very dramatic. The work was very, very good. The striking was legitimately like lip piercing, and the fact that I just genuinely felt it. Really well arranged, really well thought out, potentially at the last minute, in that it proved, as much as last week didn't, that Dragunov stands a chance. This is all sublime. Some of the ways that Dragunov trapped Roderick Strong's arms to evade those strikes was just beautiful pro wrestling at its best. This, I still think they've probably got better in them, but I mean, probably put this together in like hours. So fair play at them. I thought this was really strong.
And there's no way that cuts healing before Sunday, is there?
Even if it doesn't, they'll try and keep it open.
Yeah.
He's going to literally chop his head open.
Very excited for that. We got the prime target for Cole O'Reilly 3. It's a prime target. We're not really going to say much about it. Go and watch it. It did very well in terms of hiding all the negatives and accentuating the positives of this grudge match ahead of the weekend. But it's a prime target. We're not going to talk too much about it. Instead, we'll talk about Hit Row. They came out. They were furious yet again following a couple of weeks ago. Santos Escobar stealing Swerve's grill, and then they burnt his mask last week. And outcomes Swerve, BFAB, Top Dollar, Shantley the Adonis. They're, you know, calling out Legado del Fantasma. When Santos Escobar appears on the video screen, he's in the most dangerous place in all of NXT, the car park. And he said, "You know what? I understand where you're coming from. I've gone too far stealing this grill. So I'll tell you what, Swerve, you come on your own, man to man. And there's no one else. There's definitely no one else here. Come and collect your grill and I'll give it back to you." And Swerve tells his gang to stay in the ring, comes out to meet Escobar. And of course, there is Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde, who try to jump in from behind. A brawl. Escobar uses the numbers game to start beating up Swerve, and the rest of Hit Row pile outside. And we have a brilliant brawl. Top Dollar just looked ridiculous, just hoying one of them into that rolling steel door. B-Fab had like a bat or a lead pipe or something. She was twatting people with that. Eventually, the numbers game catches up to Legado del Fantasma because there's four of Hit Row, and Scott takes his grill back. But yeah, just reiterating what we've always said, the car park is lethal in an NXT Siege.
It is, and Swerve Scott should know better if I am to take him seriously as a babyface. Like, what's his character? Like, what is it? I don't get it. This was him basically doing Drake Maverick stuff. Like, this plucky baby face who's got more guts than sense, I suppose. Look, the brawl was actually really well done.
Yeah.
I thought. So I didn't really care that Swerve Scott was an idiot. Most characters in WWE are, so I guess I'm desensitized to it. Brawl was strong. I'm somewhat amped for the trios match next week. If they can possibly imbue some of the energy of this brawl into it. I'm thinking, is there any stip attached to it? Some kind of like tornado, no DQ?
I have no idea, actually.
No.
I like this brawl, and I would like to see it folded into a proper wrestling match, like a wild one at that. Yeah, this is all right.
Maybe there's no stipulation, because I sort of felt like B-Fab stole the show here a little bit with the pipe. I thought she was like the best aspect of the brawl. I wasn't so hot on this. There's been something bothering me about this feud. As much as I think it's probably been effective in getting Hit Row over the line as baby faces, I don't know, it still all feels a little bit staged. You know, I don't really like musicals because I find it a bit weird when characters break into song. It's just a strange difficulty I have in musicals when that bit happens. And that feels a little bit like this. Like when they start their fight, it feels a little bit West Side Story. Like they're all going to stop briefly, sing about hitting each other, and then go back to hitting each other. And I don't know if it's just the way it's like shot or like when everybody's paired off with everybody else. That's what I liked about, like, again, B-Fab and the pipe. It was the only bit that felt to me like authentic. Like these were actually wanting to get at each other in this dangerous car park rather than being carefully, you know, managed by Shawn Michaels doing an outside broadcast or something like that. the match will be good though. This was as effective as it needed to be, I suppose. So we've got his grill back, didn't we?
Yeah.
It's part of the NXT problem is, like, I enjoyed this brawl. I thought elements of it well done. I thought elements of it conveyed certain aspects of certain performance characters with Top Dollar, which we mentioned, but I'm not going to think about this ever again until next week. NXT broadly is just irrelevant, which never helps anything.
So earlier on in the show, we saw LA Knight being taken care of by his butler. "You carry guys, baby, to the moon," just dabbing his brow. And he spots Josh Briggs, and LA Knight offers him $10,000 to basically beat up Cameron Grimes and weaken him ahead of their match at TakeOver. So then we had the match, Cameron Grimes versus Josh Briggs. Ted DiBiase was at ringside and bet $20,000 on Grimes beating Briggs in the midst of him saying that, he hit him with a huge side slam, and you thought, oh, Ted, you're losing him more money. But yes, Grimes, despite the fact he was wrestling in his butler suit, had the counter for everything Briggs did. He did that mint flipping belly to belly or whatever it is that he does, which always looks fantastic. Hit Briggs with the cave in. 1, 2, 3. Grimes was celebrating, ripping off his butler suit, and Ted DiBiase was going to collect his money from LA Knight, who just chinned him and then hit Grimes with his finisher on the outside to close this off. What did you think, Hamflet?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. They've arrived at the match probably at the right time, because there's clearly like not a lot else left to do. You could feel the energy was a bit lower with all the characters at this point. They've done about as much as they can do with the story. I got a decent amount of faith in the match and the payoff and the moment at the end when it all happens at TakeOver. So they haven't, you know, they kind of haven't, although it feels like it's run out of fuel, it's not completely broken down or anything. I just don't know if after the fact, I've kept thinking that after this, LA Knight and Cameron Grimes are both going to be in stronger positions as a result of this feud. And I'm starting to doubt that for LA Knight. I'm wondering if this is maybe the peak of his powers and Grimes going forward. Is it like Grimes going forward as a babyface? And I thought he looked great. This is only a couple of minutes, but like I like getting to see Cameron Grimes have these matches because he does. It's, you know, like that suplex that you described, and like the cave-in's really popular. And one of these days, that's going to win him like a really, really big match as well. Mm. There's a certain specialness to seeing Cameron Grimes for me. Now they've actually turned him, but I'm not so sure where you go with LA Knight after the fact. This was all okay, though. It wasn't standout stuff as part of the angle, but there's no need for any of that at this point.
I could tell that they put a decent amount of thought in with the bet and how the bet further got Cameron Grimes over with the fact that he was someone placed a bet on him to win when he's in a defensive position. Oh, that's quite nice. I didn't like watching him work in that outfit. Just looked like an idiot. Mm. I understand that he's kind of playing one, but I don't know, I disagree with Hamflet because I thought it dulled his dynamism. I thought the Spanish fly looked a bit awkward. The cave in, I was just looking at the ruffles of his trousers rather than like the sudden impact of the strike. Yeah, this is fine. Ready for it to end. But they should really be commended for doing some proper entertaining, legit funny skits on NXT TV. They've really crafted a storyline. The storyline reduced to its core component as a vehicle to get Cameron Grimes over as a babyface, which is a really great idea because he connects with this crowd. All of it, I think we'll look back at about a month or two and think, you know what, that was really well done. Mm. I'm ready for it to end.
Andrade, Miz and Cameron Grimes, like, get wrestlers back in tights and out of
trouble. Please get wrestlers back in tight. Andrade, shows your legs. Andrade, this body guy thing. No one's taking it seriously as a power guy. Just sprint, knees first, someone's head. Too much to ask.
I will say I really liked Cameron Grimes' promo later on, but we'll get to that in due course because before that, we had, I also really enjoyed this, Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, they're backstage, Indy Hartwell's there, she's got gloves on, just like Dexter Lumis, and she's talking about loads of dates because they have to cram them in because of what's coming later. They've been on loads of dates, this isn't like a massively expedited relationship. And Candice and Johnny were just brilliant here. Candice furious that they have their own shirt now, and as Indy's going through the dates they've been on, she says, oh, we've been hiking. Gargano says, we rode our bikes. Ugh. We went in a hot air balloon. Okay, that's pretty cool. Brilliant from Johnny Gargano here. They're going to get matching tattoos. Indy Hartwell hints about taking their relationship to the next level. And Dex Lumis shows up. Johnny Gargano says, basically, how long have you been stood there? And says, did you like that cake last week? Put in your face. And she went, yeah, when he got some pie afterwards, talk about sex.
Next year is Dex Lumis ate a twat.
This popped me big. What do you think, Sidge?
Twat things are funny. Like, this is like, again, I talk about this quite often. Is this funny? If this was a three camera sitcom, what do you think? Oh, it's funny, this. Or do you think, oh, Christ, Melissa Joan Hart didn't get much work after Sabrina the Teenage Witch. That's, you know, that stuff she does with Joey from Blossom. Like, this is the level of comedy we're at. Like, innuendos, not particularly great humor. You still have room for pie after. Twat pie. It's read for wrestling, I guess. But I've got very dark, surreal, off-kilter tastes in comedy. So, yeah, it's arid. It's, I mean, this brand's dead, and this is one of the reasons why, but I don't not enjoy it.
Careful in America, because fanny means bum, not you minge.
Fanny till it turns blue. What?
Dig it. I like the hot air balloon line. I did. He gets me every now and then, Gargano, with these little sly ones.
Did you say it was baller? I think you said that's baller.
Yeah. He did sort of pop me a little bit there. It's all right, isn't it? A little bit of the match made me laugh as well. I kind of resent them for it. A bit of the match really got me.
We'll get to that in a second, because we have to talk before that pamphlet about Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. Zoe Stark just wants to be friends, and Io Shirai just goes, can you just defend the tag titles and just leave it at that? I mean, at least it wasn't a skit in a restaurant.
Aye, Christ. Like, what are you supposed to think? I just don't get it. Like, Io Shirai's not wrong for being, should we just concentrate on the tag team titles?
Mm.
But she's still a bit of a dick for, like, what's Stark done that's so awful? Like, Io Shirai, in the last few months, has befriended enough wrestling baby faces to put a bin on her head and jump on the heel. She'd happily tag team with Poppy if given the chance whenever she turns up in NXT. I don't get why she turned babyface. Have they forgotten that? Is it just Sean and Paul's bloody nobody's, like, they think they were too cool for school, even in 2006. So it's like, this is what's going to really get EO over as a babyface, is hating everybody and making people resent her. And even if they're setting up for the angle, like, they've done that. Like, if there's a turn, they've done that at the very origin of this unit, this whole thing of, like, you know, eventually Stark would have kind of grew to resent her. I hate how thick they are. If Stark ever turns, it's going to be justified. Because it's going to be like, well, you're a complete arsehole for months and months and months and months. That's too much justification for the heel. You're supposed to have a little bit, but ultimately you're supposed to think, but that's not enough. You shouldn't have done that. I'm starting to think, I'd be getting pretty sick of this as well with the tag team champions.
I'm getting sick of it, I'll tell you that. It's absolutely woeful. It's absolute woeful material. I don't know if you're meant to think, hey, those crazy kids have got a bit of chemistry. One doesn't like the other. It's like, okay, bro, it's miles more entertaining than this. And it's the exact same thing. Zoe Stark, I don't know if we're meant to think of her as sympathetic. I don't know if the restaurant skit was meant to think that she's... there's that. Is she meant to be selling the caustic Io Shirai deadpans as, like, punchlines? Is a joke? Is, like, her inability to register things, much like Riddle's obliviousness is functioning as the punchline, right? Everyone can see that Randy Orton's dick. Randy Orton's really good at the deadpan. And Riddle's obliviousness is meant to function as the light relief, the comedic relief. Like, Zoe Stark doesn't have the personality for this. It's the oddest thing. It's the monkey's paw stuff for getting, for us saying, you know what, you should actually build proper storylines around Japanese women in NXT, and this is the monkey's paw curling because they can't do anything.
They've not even defended the belts yet, have they?
So it's like, you guys need tag teams, is there?
You know what would probably really tighten up the in-ring game? Having matches.
It's yet another indictment of where we're at with NXT. At least last year, when they were, like, pretty much annihilating the integrity of the Rhea Ripley character, people still gave a toss about the performer underneath it, that there was a little bit of outrage or sadness, or at the very least, there was a little bit of, ha-ha, you can't even get her over. How rubbish are you, WWE, from the usual people, sometimes me. No one cares that Io Shirai is in a terrible role right now. There's not even any, like, conversations to be had in terms of, like, mocking it. Like, Jesus Christ, it's ice cold this. No wonder bloody Vince McMahon hates it.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Well, let's move on to the highlight of the show. That being Dexalimus and Indy Hartwell teaming together to take on Robert Stone and Jesse Kamea, Frankie Monet, briefly at ringside for this one. The story of the match was Robert Stone just is no potential opposition for Dexalimus, effectively bounced off him. I mean, he looked great whilst doing it. My word. I mean, his ponytail, his physique, his gear, he just has no physical impact on someone like Dexalimus. And I mentioned Frankie Monet, she early on in an attempt to help Robert Stone grabbed Dexalimus's leg and got pulled into the ring so she could get kicked out as we went to break. So Jessica Meir does get some offense in on Indy Hartwell. She's controlling it, but then she gets to the ropes after a submission attempt and tags in Dexalimus, who just batters Robert Stone. And you have the heels jumping in to save each other from pinfalls. At some point, Dexalimus is on the outside and Robert Stone goes for this big dive onto him and just splats on the floor, gets nowhere near him. For slapstick, I love Robert Stone for that sort of thing. So Jessica Meir is also on the outside, so she twats Dexalimus. That causes Hartwell to fire up, to batter about the ringside, and then they put a signature silent submission finishes on both of them as Indy Hartwell gets a submission victory here. Prior to the match, she had a little nod back and forth with Beth Phoenix, and she before I forget, actually, shout out to Jake on Twitter, who quite rightly suggested a brilliant thing that they should have done here, which was Indy Hartwell and Dexalimus tagging in and out via kisses rather than hitting each other's hands, which would have been a great idea, that. But post-match, Indy Hartwell rolls to the outside. Looks like she's having a little post-match chat with Beth Phoenix. But actually, Beth slips her something. She rolls back into the ring, gets down on one knee, proposes to Dexalimus with a garish ring. He accepts. They kiss. They got engaged. We've got a bloody wedding on our hands, Michael Hamflett.
Wedding's brilliant. WWE know that they get ratings as well, which again could be a sign that Bruce and Vince and Big Johnny have rode in on their ratings horses trying to save the show. But I'm looking forward to it. Every week it's what next for these guys, and the weddings come up as an option before, as a destination at least. It can't not be great, that whole thing. I really, really like this match. They had a job on their hands here. The women were instructed to work a serious match against the backdrop of the men working a ludicrous one. That was a hard task, and I thought they absolutely sailed through it. I don't know how this was as good as it was. That dive spot was really funny. Like, NXT is criminally low on good patter and good gags. That was really, really funny. Like, an elegantly constructed joke of a wrestling spot in the middle of the portion of the match that was supposed to be funny, the Dexalimus and Robert Stone interactions. The work was basic, don't get me wrong. Like, the stuff that was actually going on was nothing to write home about. But if you think about what they were trying to do with this match, like, a total overachievement. Legitimately impressed me with this. And you got this payoff that, again, is another one of those talking points that we're talking about. People are genuinely interested in this index thing. They have been pretty much since the off. This was the natural place for it to go, as wrestling romances do. And the wedding's going to be something huge to talk about, to preview, to review, and to look back on and to kind of like try and predict the fun stuff they're going to do with it. Couldn't have loved any of this more.
I really enjoyed watching it. Thought the appraisal of the women's work was a bit generous. I thought some of it was like really bad, like really, really bad. But the goddamn dive. It wasn't just the dive, right? It's like a favourite thing about Robert Stone's Steven Seagal-inspired get-up is that Steven Seagal, over the years, has been exposed as a total fraud. He's this obese narcissist who actually can't really do martial arts. But in a bid to prove it to himself, have you ever seen the footage of these exhibitions?
Yeah.
Where Steven Seagal's like, he's got these, he's this big fat bastard. He's got these like people who can take bumps effectively for him. And he just goes, hey. And it's like just that he just lifts his arm a little bit. And these people are bumping like 2.0 slash Ever-Eyes or like any kind of comedic enhancement talents you like. And it's just Steven Seagal goes, yeah, Chindam, that's how hard I am. The mere choice of getting worked by Steven Seagal in 2021 is exactly beautifully consistent with what an idiot Robert Stone is.
Mm.
I could not have loved that gear choice more. It looked fantastic with the ponytail and the abs. His timing was absolutely expert. That goddamn dive spot, I cackled. I genuinely howled when I saw that. I was reminded, in fact, of my dad. My dad has got this very wholesome laugh when something just pops him out of nowhere. You go, ah! Like that. I did the exact same thing. Just what an idiot. What an irresistible idiot Robert Stone was in this match.
Yeah. Future 24/7 champion right there.
Yeah.
Here was the bit that Sid mentioned earlier with Malcolm Bivens saying, I did like the bit where he's like, don't talk to him. You talk to me. To poor Mackenzie Mitchell. But yeah, he excused the loss for Robert Stone.
He can't really talk, so, you know, talk to me.
He said, Dragunov's a heavyweight, not a cruiserweight. So we've still got a title shot. That doesn't count. That was a real quiz, et cetera, et cetera.
Kiss my ass. Kiss my balls.
And then we got the face-to-face, well, not face-to-face, the split-screen interview with Raquel Gonzalez and Dakota Kai building their title match on Sunday. All the usual very generic sort of stuff here. You're envious, you're a snake, you're too big for your britches, you're ungrateful, I'm gonna whoop your ass at all costs, you're dreaming, you're gonna call me champion on Sunday, oh good luck with that, sidekick, I taught you everything. This kind of did nothing for me, to be honest, Sid.
No, total boilerplate stuff that didn't actually make that much sense, because Raquel Gonzalez, actually I'm smarter than you, because I knew LTST that when you turned on Tegan Nox, I knew what to expect from you one day. So why did he spend all that time with her? Why did he spend all that time with her? I'm the smart one. I've been waiting for an attack, which actually happened for a year. What? This is absolutely boilerplate material, plot holes, pretty bad performances. It was like nestled away and it lasted all of a minute. It was barely hyped. Like, this match is genuinely a shame. Like, it's a shame that it's all come to this, because it was really good for a while. And now it's...
They could have a great match on Sunday. It's just the build's been pretty... From what we could have pitched, it's been very weak, hasn't it, Sig?
Yeah, they've lost faith in it, is my overriding thing. They've either lost faith or don't care as much as the fans did. And that is terrible promotion in principle.
This feud is the waterfall in the Dungeon of Doom because it's not hot. But maybe the match will benefit from drastically lowered expectations, because Raquel Gonzalez could sort of do with one of those. When expectations have been high, she's kind of let the side down a bit as champion. So hopefully this is the one saving grace from, yeah, a big disappointment.
Where's Vink? Well, he's up next, except he's called Duke Bloody Hansen now. He was facing Carmelo Hayes in the other semi-final of the NXT Breakout Tournament. The story of this match, obviously, Hudson, the bigger man, was just in control for the most part, but Carmelo Hayes is just, oh, he's just a sensational wrestler. They each time send each other outside the ring. The second time, it's Hayes sending Hudson out there. Hits a DDT on the apron on Hudson. Hayes hit La Mystica and then came off the top with that flying guillotine leg drop thing. Looked wonderful as well. And Carmelo Hayes, not what we predicted this, beats Duke Hudson. He goes through to the final to face Odyssey Jones, and post-match he has a thing at the top of the ramp where he says he called his shot at the beginning of this tournament he was going to make the finals. That's not enough for him now, though. He has got to face the final boss next, but surprise Odyssey Jones, plot twist, I'm the final boss. Out comes Odyssey Jones. He's all pumped up. He says the universe is going to sound the alarm next week. They go back and forth during ahead of the final. I've really quite enjoyed this match, and I'm very excited for that final, Hamflet.
Yeah, fair enough. Like the kind of subverted expectations of the big lads match we maybe all thought it was going to lead to. Here's in NXT's defense a little bit. He was like hotly tipped at the start of all this. And I guess this bracket, you know, I won't speak for you guys, but kind of allowed me to forget about that because it just looked like the Hudson route to the final seemed assured. Match was decent. I was a little bit scared by that apron DDT because I don't know, like, if Vink was all there after the fact. Where's Vink? Even he doesn't know because he just took a really terrifying looking DDT. But they're gone. They kind of like finished the match soon enough after the fact that there wasn't much danger to be had afterwards. So they probably got away with one maybe there. The final's not bad. I never really like those ramp face-offs because it sort of feels like it's, I don't know, it's like sucking the energy out of the animosity between them. Like, they both want this, and I understand it's not a blood feud. It's a matter of respect, and it's a tournament final. But, like, I don't really want to be reminded that they're kind of, like, almost, like, matey patter at this point. Like, this should be everything to them. Decent final, though. The match should be fine.
Yeah.
I wasn't high on this at all. I just can't escape how ironic this is. That they're not breakout stars. No one's out there on Twitter or comment sections or whatever talk about how they've been impressed by this breakout star. He's the real breakout star. It's like not one of these matches has had a moment that even approaches what Dante Martin did on Dynamite last week, for example. That was a breakout star performance. Like, it's none of that. I've been told and I haven't been shown realistically one bit. I mean, it's fine broadly, the action, and I think this was. I thought this was really clunky in places. You could tell that Carmelo Hayes is well beyond Vink as a worker. Dynamic just sort of came a cropper, particularly on that apron spot, but I thought it was clunky as well. And ultimately, you can't just have some middling grade matches on telly and call it a breakout star, because what you're basically doing is your job now, such as the standard of 2021, this whole thing's done really nout for me, if I'm being brutally honest.
I think there's certainly obviously something, and considering the way he looks, obviously WWE will do something with someone like Duke Hudson. So he's got something there. And I really like the dynamic of Carmelo versus Odyssey Jones next week. For me, I'd have Carmelo victorious before the summer's out. I'd make haze while the sun shines. Ted DiBiase was in the back with... Yeah, we go, baby! Moving quickly along. Ted DiBiase goes to apologise to Cameron Grimes, and he says, you don't need to apologise to me, Ted. You know, I'm the one who got carried away with all this money. I dropped the ball for you, but after TakeOver, they're both going to be fighters up. They're both going to be million-dollar champions going to the moon. He rips his shirt off and storms off, but Ted DiBiase laughs and he's impressed and says, that's my Cameron. I really liked Cameron firing up here. What did you think, Sid?
That was kind of enough. Pure ham.
Oh, yeah.
I like that from Cameron. Hammering Grimes.
Yeah. It just sort of bolt on to the match, really, wasn't it? This they've done absolutely everything they possibly could for this match on Sunday at TakeOver.
Right, then we got a title match on this show. MSK defending the NXT tag titles against Imperium, and the match kind of went exactly the way we wanted it and expected it to go. Imperium trying to ground these two guys who are just, I mean, they're breakout stars, Sidge. They are the ones who've just completely burst through the screen. One of the real, real great moments of NXT this year. Imperium working over Carter and Lee, and they eventually get to tag in Lee, and they run wild and they go for stereo dives, but Imperium catch both of them and stereo suplexes on the floor. They get a near fall off a exploder in the corner by Marcel Bartel. Carter gets the hot tag, just brilliant. He's such a great fired up baby face. But Walter appears at ringside, distracts the referee. That allows Imperium to regain the advantage. And they set up. Looks like they might win the match. They might win the tag titles. They set up for their big finisher, climbing up the turnbuckles. But then Ilya Dragunov runs out, starts brawling with Walter. That distracts them. That allows MSK to hit that blockbuster heart attack combo thing on Fabian Aichner. Carter cradles him. 1, 2, 3. Walter brawls with Dragunov after the match. MSK tries to make the save and Walter just goes, no, lays both of them out. That allows Dragunov to recover. He beats up Walter. He gets in the ring, starts brawling with Imperium and knocks both of them down and turns around. It's just one of those, you know, I'm not a fan of like the KO punch, for example, by Big Show, but just like, right, that's you, Fabian Aichner. Right, that's you, Marcel Bartel. Wham! Just a one shot, just completely lays out Dragunov. Walter stands over him and then goes, nah, I'm going to choke him out as well. And then they stand tall. Yeah, good stuff, this, Hamlet.
Yeah, I thought all of this was a load of fun. I got just about what I needed from MSK Imperium, mainly because I like the strengths of the double teams from both teams as well. The double dive, double catch spot was really good. The double baseball slide kind of like forcing Imperium to be ever so slightly more entertaining than just like their heat sequences are so often just like tag, followed by a boring move. Tag, followed by a boring move, done with all the Vic Joseph I can summon with my sore throat. And I thought they were kind of dragged into MSK's formula a little bit here in the most welcoming of ways. It never really dragged. The runtime felt about right, like less than 15 minutes, something absolutely perfect for like a TV tag title defense, because like the audience can't get tired from the high spots. And what you get is a relatively short heat sequence in the middle before you get what feels like a race to finish because of the way MSK do it. So just I thought like a really pleasingly constructed TV tag match. And then no complaints whatsoever with the Walter stuff at the end. Walter presented as this monster, as the reason that everybody looks over their shoulder whenever Imperium are in town, because he's this guy that can do bad things to people. Thought the 50-50'd Walter and Dragunov in the build, but then their original match was sort of rooted in them being 50-50 and Walter just being ever so slightly better at the end. So I think that kind of makes sense as well. It wasn't on them. Just because we were a bit cross that Dragunov lost last week, it wasn't on them to make Dragunov this dominant challenger. It was to just show that he was at least at Walter's level, even if he ends the night getting choked out here. So I thought that was pretty effective as well. I don't think MSK suffered from taking this beating. Maybe there's one fun trios match in this after the fact as well, before Dragunov heads back to Enfield or wherever he goes when he loses a takeover, or wins, I guess. But yeah, genuinely effective, all of this.
Ultimately, I'm glad I wasn't patronised with some kind of epic, because I didn't get one. I got a nice, compact, all-action tag team match, all functional, little spikes of excitement. I've seen way better from MSK, but, you know, it's a TV match. Ultimately, there was very little to grab onto. It felt like a spot fest without some kind of like brain melting spot that you just completely go delirious for. I had a fun time watching a good match, is my ultimate takeaway. I don't think I'll remember it in like best TV match of the year or anything of the sort, but it was probably what the show needed after like a very go homey comedic middle portion.
Yeah, exactly. And give me Grizzled Young Vets next, please. I did read, I swear I read that Ridge Holland was meant to be facing Timothy Thatcher this week. That didn't happen. Instead, he cut a promo alongside Pete. Sorry.
We do.
Pete, I'd really like the fact Pete Dunne cut a promo basically slagging off Thatcher and Ciampa and ignoring them and stuff. And it just, you know, I'm from Derbyshire, it's close to Yorkshire, it's all sort of, you know, mixed in together there. The bit where he handed over to Ridge Holland and Ridge Holland went, lovely. I don't know why. I was so happy with that. He basically said he'd fight through other people to get to a fight, and that's exactly what he's going to do to fight Thatcher next week. He was impressed with bollocks on him, but he said, Timothy Thatcher, I'll be seeing you. I love him. I love Ridge Holland. I've completely changed my opinion on him through this and this promo alone, I think, Sid.
Yeah, you love doing the voice.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what it is. That's what it is.
It's either Ridge Holland or you doing Jinder Mahal.
Fine stuff. Good, I guess. Like, it was just a thing. I like hearing bollocks.
Yes.
On American telly. That's good. He's got right bollocks on him, as he said.
Mick Foley, he came out of that pay-per-view 99 and like called somebody a wanker. And you're like, that's cool.
That's good, that crack guy. Look, I like rough caricatures of men who can pop me and don't just do completely manufactured intensity, which leads us to the main event segue.
Oh, lovely stuff. Yes, it was time for the main event, the face-to-face between Karrion Kross and Samoa Joe. Joe's out first. He says, oh, it's time yet again to verbally eviscerate Kross in front of the world, but what's the point? He isn't here to hurt Kross's feelings because he's here to hurt Kross, period. That's the Joey's going to kill your chance. He tells Kross to tuck your clock in your back pocket and stroll your ass down here, young champion. In comes Kross, who stands on the top of the entrance ramp, and Kross says, you still don't get it. It's not about you. It's not about me. It's not about us. This is about the future of this brand. And he calls out a security team to the ring, and he groans from the crowd, and he says, oh, don't worry. They're not protection for me from you. It's protection for you from me. And he says he's going to drop Joe real fast at TakeOver. They square up in the ring. Joe snaps, brawls with him. Security obviously tried to get involved. Joe just throws Kross into security initially. They brawl. Joe does a tope suicida through the ropes into Kross and just everyone. And it's, yeah, it's this carnage around ringside as they can't be kept apart. And the moment they clash, that they, you know, tear through walls or throw each other into the ring steps or whatever. Obviously, the security pull Joe off Kross. That allows Kross to recover and attack Joe, who's being held back. Kross goes to suplex you onto the announce desk, but Joe counters. The crowd are screaming in terror as they fly through barricades and what have you. And they do it again, and they're just all security, some of the wrestlers who've come out from the back to try and celebrate them, to separate them, and the two men who just can't keep their hands off each other. They're just exhausted, laid out as the show goes off the air, and Vic Joseph yells about these two. Anything goes, effectively, at TakeOver on Sunday. Michael Sidgwick, carnage ahead of TakeOver.
Yeah, there were two things I liked about this, and neither involve Karrion Kross. One, I like it when Samoa Joe refers to Karrion Kross as young champion, because I'm terrified at the prospect of turning 36 next month. But I'm still young in the mind of one person. I understand he's patronising, and I understand he's setting out the scene that he's like the elder badass figurehead of an older NXT era. I get it. I'm just being a dick. It was awesome watching Samoa Joe do some more Joe stuff. It really was class. I really hope that intensity, a real strain of it at last, is channeled into a really short sprint of a match at TakeOver, which I honestly think we're going to get, given what we are going to get, which is 58 minutes of Cole O'Reilly. So if this is an accurate advertisement for the match on Saturday, yes, I think it's got every chance of succeeding, and I'll be amped for this version of the match. Don't false advertise to me. I want to see Karrion Kross for more than 10 minutes.
It's got to be short, because we've seen everything else that these two can do to each other, realistically. I wasn't mega high on this, to be honest. It's, if you're going to do these types of brawls, I think it's imperative that you buy that, you know, they just cannot be separated. You know those weeks where the start of a Raw or a SmackDown ahead of one of our reviews, you're watching it, like, hang on, am I watching last week's Raw? Genuinely, I need to double check that I'm not watching last week's episode, because it's identical. This was like watching the ending of a prior NXT. Like, they've just had nothing, they had no ideas, they had no other way to book them other than to have a face-to-face that becomes a fight. That happened with Karrion Kross in his last title defense as well, didn't he, versus the four of them in your house. So I wasn't mega impressed with the premise, or I wasn't dragged in by the brawl, but I do agree with the energy around Samoa Joe. He looks motivated. He looks like he wants to have the best possible short match he can have with Karrion Kross. And I do hope it is that. I think it's to the betterment of the card on the night. Colin O'Reilly's going on last, isn't it? We know that's going to happen. So you can watch this and then get yourselves off to bed and just catch O'Reilly. O'Reilly and Cole when you're in a better mood for it, because I cannot see that not main eventing.
There is no time to go back to bed. I'm in Britain, so...
Nothing Samoa Joe could say on the microphone before the brawl was as cutting as those Jeff Hardy chants that aren't going away either. So what was the point in trying?
And there was, I think there was a Where's Scarlett chant I caught as well.
Where's Scarlett?
One of my new favourite things, cynical as this may be, is NXT fans, of which I once considered myself one, but like NXT purists, believing that the NXT that Vince McMahon is about to destroy or whatever is like the one from 2015 or something. Mm. Like there'll be a clip of the proposal from tonight or the, you know, the Where's Scarlett chants or whatever. They'll be like, thanks a lot, Vince and Bruce. Golden era's over. And it's like, oh, it was over ages ago. What they're destroying something, but it's not what you think they're destroying.
Yes, so there we go. The lead in to NXT TakeOver this weekend. We'll, of course, be reviewing it on Monday. Myself and Michael Cedric Hamflett enjoying a well-earned break from all of this bollocks, basically. And if you want to get that, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts. We'll be previewing Dynamite as well later on. Plus, you can let us know your thoughts and Twitter questions, anything like that, on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
Follow Michael Cedric at...
M. Sidgwick.
Follow me at Adam Wilborn. As I said, follow us all at What Culture WWE. But this has been the NXT review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.